back. I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. For the next 2 weeks, the media will be consumed with the Republican and Democratic national conventions. The Republican convention is supposed to kick off tomorrow in Tampa, Florida, depending on the weather. And the Democratic convention kicks off in Charlotte, North Carolina next Tuesday. Both parties are hoping the conventions inspire their supporters to give a lot of money and go to the polls in November. Now, this year, both parties and outside groups are spending billions to get voters to the polls, but they're mainly focused on engaging their bases. Unlike past elections, both parties are mostly ignoring independent voters. According to a Gallup poll, 40% of all registered voters are now independents, the highest figure since Gallup began keeping track 50 years ago. Since 2008, 2.5 million voters have left the two major parties to become independents. Today, independents comprise a larger group, about 41%, than registered Republicans, 27%, or Democrats, 31%. On today's Your Call, we are talking about this sizable voting bloc. Who are the independents? If you're an independent, are you feeling ignored right now? Are you planning to vote? And what issues do you care about? Joining us to talk about independence is Omar Ali, Associate Professor of African American History at the University of North Carolina at Greensboro and an independent political analyst on CNN. He's editor of the Neo-Independent Online and author of the book Independent Black Politics and Third Party Movements in the United States. Hi, Omar. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Rose. Thanks for having me on.
It's great to have you. We're also joined by Jason Olson, director of IndependentVoice.org, a political nonprofit that serves as the California branch of the independent movement. IndependentVoice.org has been involved in numerous advocacy and ballot initiative campaigns to open the primary, reform redistricting, and implement public campaign financing. Hi, Jason. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me.
Hi, Jason.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Well, let's start off with Omar. Omar, what do you make of the latest Gallup poll? What explains the large jump in independent registrations?
Well, I mean, there's a long history of Americans basically, you know, asserting themselves outside of the two major parties to affect reform.
Jason, we're having a hard... Oh, I'm sorry, that's Omar. Your line is not very good. We're going to have to call you right back. Okay, thank you. And Jason, are you with us?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Okay, yes. Thank you. Thanks for joining us.
No problem.
So Jason, yeah, well, sorry about that. How do you explain the jump in independent registration?
Well, I think, you know, if you just look at the coverage of the presidential election, it becomes pretty self-evident. I mean, what we're seeing right now is one of the most partisan campaigns that we've seen in decades. But, you know, you don't just take it out of context, it follows on the heels of government becoming increasingly partisanized. They can't raise the debt ceiling. They can't do anything for the country that isn't about the political parties. And more Americans are coming to the conclusion that, hey, this just doesn't work anymore. We've got two private organizations in charge that are more interested in their own perpetuation and their own political power than they are what's right for the American public. So, you know, it's no surprise then that Americans are leaving the political parties in droves. And I think even more so it speaks, if you look at the numbers, they're not, these folks who are leaving the Democratic and Republican parties, they're not running out to join an independent political party or a third party. But they are becoming independents and they're still participating in the political process as unaffiliated voters. So I think that's a very important declaration.
And Omar, you're back with us, hopefully on a better line.
I am.
Oh, much better. Thank you. So how do you explain the rise in independent registration?
Well, I mean, I completely agree with what Jason is saying. And I think the kind of work that he's doing with Independent Voice is out there in California is just fantastic because we need more people to have some sort of vehicle to give expression to this, what is an anti-partisan sentiment. And like he said, basically people aren't leaving to join a third party. They're basically saying we don't trust the political parties. And what independent leaders around the country have been saying for some time, you know, from Dr. Lenora Fulani to Jacqueline Salit to Jason Olson and others, is that the parties are exerting too much control over the political process. And that's not good for policy at the end of the day, because if you have basically a duopoly controlling things. You can't bring in innovative ideas, and not to speak of, you know, the issue of democracy. So in some ways, I think this disaffection from the two major parties is basically an anti-partisan sentiment, which has been going on for some time. It's not just a new thing. It's been going on steadily over the last couple of decades.
It's interesting you say that, because I just got a tweet from Jason who says research shows that only 7 to 10% of voters are pure independents. Most independents lead towards one party, and most independents behave like strong partisans. How would you respond to that, Omar?
Well, you know, I get such a kick out of this. I mean, the number of pollsters have been describing the true independents are really much smaller. I mean, the way that I think about it is this. If a person is desperately hungry and they're offered a rotten apple or a rotten banana, they're going to end up choosing one or the other. That's the system we have. People don't feel like they have other choices, so they're basically going to choose the lesser of the two, if you will, evils. So it's not a positive thing. It's a very negative way of conducting a democracy. So when people say, oh, they're not truly independent, or they're really closet Democrats, Democrats with closet Republicans, it's not taking into account the structural limitations that independents face from simply getting on the ballot. If you want to run for national office, that is, if you want to run for president, you would have to get 20 to 30 times the number of signatures just to have your name appear on the ballot. That is completely and blatantly unfair. The way in which independents are excluded from, you know, 30 some states in the first round of voting, closed primaries. So there are structural limitations. So when people say, oh, it's the true independents are only 7 to 10%, it's in some ways not taking account the totality of the electoral system.
Yeah, actually, could I, if I could respond to this also, just
yes,
to add to what Omar is saying, maybe from a different angle. I mean, the folks who do these polls, they're drawing the wrong conclusions because they're asking the wrong questions. So all the pollsters and the politicos are really interested in is whether independents are going to vote for a Republican or they're going to vote for a Democrat in the next election.
Uh-huh.
That's the wrong question to focus on. I mean, why? Because independents don't align on ideological issues like health care and immigration. There's no uniform independent position on health care or immigration or education. So focusing on where independents break down on these ideological issues, are they closer to the Democrats? Are they closer to the Republicans? It gives you a totally incorrect picture of who independents are. If you want to understand who independents are and how they're shaping America's political future, you really have to look at how they feel about the control that the political parties have over our government. So what we call partisanship.
Mm-hmm.
So in polls, you know, nearly 80%, Omar, you know, I'm not going to tell him anything he doesn't already know. In polls, nearly 80% of independents feel that government in Washington, D.C. does the right thing only sometimes or never. And independents blame the parties and the partisan structure of our government for that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's interesting because, again, I mean, the Washington Post and the Kaiser Family Foundation came out with a study that found nearly two-thirds of Americans who describe themselves as independents mm-hmm. act very much like partisan Republicans or partisan Democrats. But your argument is that these polls are somewhat shallow and they don't really go beyond the sort of basic questions.
Yeah, they're fundamentally asking the wrong questions. The question they want to know is, are they going to vote for Barack Obama or Mitt Romney or this Republican or that Democrat in this race or that race? It fundamentally misunderstands who independents are. Independents, if they really were, you know, dyed-in-the-wool Republicans and that's the only issues that they cared about, why wouldn't they be registered in the Republican Party? And you know, same with independents who quote-unquote lean Democratic. What independents are saying uniformly is that we don't trust the political parties to do what's in the best interest of the country any longer. We view them as actors that are primarily interested in their own preservation. Now, when you give us a choice, like Omar said, the rotten apple or the rotten banana when you're starving, when we come to the ballot and we're given a choice of a Democrat or Republican, of course we're going to pick the one that we're closest to on the ideological issues. But when a candidate like, say, Barack Obama comes along in 2008 talking about political change, suddenly you see this gigantic tidal wave of independents for Obama. That's how he beat Hillary Clinton in the primary, even though she held a slight edge among Democrats, and that's how he beat McCain in the general election. It was independents who elected him based on his promise to change the political culture in the country.
Are you both surprised, and do you think this is an accurate assessment? At least in the last election, we heard regularly about the parties trying to gain the independent vote, and it seems this time around they're spending much more time focusing on their base. I'm rarely hearing the word independent in much of the media coverage. What are your thoughts, Omar?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I mean, they can only so long avoid talking about independence. I mean, we're the fastest growing grouping of voters in the country. But I think right now what they're trying to do is basically play the ideological game, to go back to what Jason was saying, and try to divide and conquer America. I mean, that's what the two parties have traditionally done. So they're hoping that they can bring out just one extra person to beat out the other candidate. And I think to their peril, because in terms of the long term, Americans are really saying, we don't want this kind of binary system where we are not given many choices. So I think they're doing it at their peril, and it's up to the independents to make sure that we come out in large numbers. It would be a mistake to stay home this election, to continue to assert our voices. This is part of a long process of transforming the political culture, which Jason was alluding to. There are structural limitations of the bi-party system, but it's also the political culture is one of winning. And in some ways, what independents also bring to the table is that maybe we shouldn't do things, A, simply around ideology, but also what is in the best interest of the country, which may not be something that parties should be doing, which is focusing on beating out the candidate, but what should we do on behalf of the country? It's a very different kind of politics.
And where do you go for that conversation? Because it's not happening in most parts of the media.
Yeah, well, you know, it's interesting. Actually, there's an incredibly important book that's just come out by one of the important leaders of the independent movement, Jacqueline Salet. It's called Independence Rising. And she basically conducts on every 6 weeks a national call of independent leaders from around the country. So there are people talking about this, and they're doing it at the local level. I know, you know, in California, what Jason's been leading there. Here in North Carolina independents have been organizing and talking to folks. It's, again, part of a large an extended process that we're just really in the beginnings of.
Today we're speaking about independence with Omar Ali, Associate Professor of African American History at the University of North Carolina at Greensboro and independent political analyst on CNN. He's editor of the Neo Independent Online and author of the book Independent Black Politics and Third Party Movements in the United States. Jason Olson is director of IndependentVoice.org, a political nonprofit that serves as the California branch of the independent movement. And according to a recent Gallup poll, 40% of all registered voters are now independents, comprising a larger group than registered Republicans, 27%, or Democrats, 31%. So what are your thoughts on this? We are hearing nonstop about Mitt Romney, Barack Obama, Republicans and Democrats, hardly hearing much about independents. If you are an independent, what do you think about our current political climate? Why are you an independent? What does that mean to you? What issues are important to you? And how do you usually vote? The toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can leave a comment at yourcallradio.org or email feedback@yourcallradio.org. And Fred has a question via email. What is the participation rate of independents in elections versus Republicans and Democrats?
Well, I mean, here in California, for instance, the Public Policy Institute of California actually does study these kinds of things. And what they found is that independents tend to participate at the same rate, if not higher, than party voters. So, you know, it's I think oftentimes the partisans want to portray independents as either uninformed, disinterested, or not able to have any kind of backbone, that the squishy middle, if you will. Mm-hmm. But when you just take a look at the numbers and you speak to independents and you look at the polls, that does not bear out to be the case. It turns out that, in fact, that independents, by and large, like to consider the issues, and they turn out in pretty solid numbers.
Where does that opinion come from? Because I'm getting a couple of tweets saying that most pure independents seem to be the least informed and involved.
Well, where does it come from? Geez, I don't know. Where does any pernicious evil rumor come from? I think it comes from the fact that that there are folks who are deeply entrenched in the partisan political system that at the end of the day are much more interested in their control than any kind of public participation, particularly by independent voters who they can't really predict or control in the way that they do partisan voters. I think just going to the reforms that we passed here in California, the open primary in 2010, the two redistricting reform measures that took power away from the political parties, every single political party in the state, every single one, even the third parties, opposed those reforms, even though it would empower the 3.6 million no-party preference independent voters here in California. Why did they do it? Because at the end of the day, those are voters that they don't control. Mm-hmm. They're very invested in their own control. And, you know, I mean, I'll tell you, you know, I don't want to get too much into all the name calling and such that happened then, but there's pretty vicious attacks on who independents are, that we're not smart enough to vote. I don't want to hearken it necessarily too closely to what happened to other minorities, you know, in their struggle for equal participation, but it's much of the same kind of smear tactics.
Yeah. I mean, just to add to what Jason's saying, independents really are people who go across the entire political spectrum. African Americans, Latino, white Americans, Asian Americans, I mean, the entire demographic, also age-wise. And I think that there's a misperception that independents are socially conservative and there's something sort of wacky about them. That's just simply not true. There's a long history of independence, independent politics in America, and currently if you look at who independents are, they really go across the entire demographic. So that's an important thing to debunk, this idea that they're socially conservative and a little wacky. The independents are of different people. I mean, many are very thoughtful, and many others aren't so thoughtful. It's just like Democrats or Republicans.
Right. Well, and it's interesting because we always want definitions, right?
Yes.
I mean, who are those voters with so many millions of people? It's hard to paint them with a broad brush.
Mm-hmm.
But how would you answer that question? I mean, is it just sort of, are they just all across the board? I mean,
Yes, they are all across the board, ideologically, demographically, in terms of gender and other things. But the thing that they share in common, again, kind of what Jason was talking about, is this feeling that the parties are more invested in their own self-perpetuation than in the good of the American people. So while they may be liberals, some of them may be conservatives, or they might have ideologically mixed positions on things, which is actually the case for many people. Some people are socially conservative, but, fiscally conservative, socially liberal. So the thing that these independents share in common is a distrust of the political parties. But it's not it's not conspiratorial. I mean, everybody knows that the parties are more concerned about themselves. So independents do have something in common. They do stand for things. They do stand for specific things in terms of policies. But how you get those policies enacted requires a more open political process. So that's the thing that they share in common. And if you will, I think independent voters are actually the people who are smartest, because they kind of can see that in ways that partisan, hardline partisan Democrats, Republicans don't.
Well, let's hear what listeners think about this. Let's hear from William in Belvedere. Hi, William. Welcome to the show.
Yes, thank you very much. I'm going to assume that by independent, the guests mean not registered in any party, as opposed to, say, being registered in a third party. That hasn't been clarified. I would like to explain why I feel it's very important to be registered in a third party. I was attending a meeting against the genetically modified food, and there were a lot of different groups there. And the Green Party had a list of that for which they stand, the issues for which they stand. And I looked at it, and, you know, less military spending, against nuclear power, against drone warfare, against genetically modified food being sold without labeling, and on down the line. And I realized from that by registering with the Green Party, I was then sending a message to the political system about how I felt about 20 different issues, and that if they wanted my vote, then they should come to me, not try to figure out whether I felt they were too far left or too far right or whatever like that. I want to tell them what I believe in, and by registering for the Green Party, I think I send that message.
Well, thank you for the comments, William. Jason, what are your thoughts on that?
Let me just be totally, totally straight with you. Particularly under the old system where we had partisan primaries and gerrymandered districts, they absolutely, when you talk about, you know, you registered into a third party to send a message so that if they wanted your vote, they didn't want your vote. They didn't need your vote. They didn't care about your vote. They didn't care about the votes of independent voters for most races because they already had a controlled partisan primary where you, not being a member of their party, couldn't participate to select their candidate. And in that district, let's just take a district, say, here in Oakland, which will be a Democratic district, the Democrat's the only one who can win that race. The Republican cannot. So they don't need your vote in the general election either. And that's the case not just here in California before the open primary that we passed, before the redistricting reforms we passed, that changed it to a nonpartisan system. That happens to be the case in about half the states in the country. Mm-hmm. And then in many more of those states that even have open primaries where independents can participate, it's still a partisan system where you're selecting a partisan candidate most of the time in a district that's been gerrymandered for only one party. So I think this is where a lot of the frustration of voters comes, and I think William expresses that in that what he's saying is, hey, I want to have some input into the political process. I'm going to go try being an independent. I'm going to go try being in the Green Party. I'm going to try doing anything other than being a Democrat and Republican to send a message because at the end of the day, I think that there's something really wrong with the control that they exercise over the whole process. Unfortunately, in about half the country, it's not very effective. And yet, it shows you how fed up people are that they're still registering it as independents in huge, huge numbers. You know, the third parties, of course, they've remained relatively stagnant over the last 20, 30 years. But the numbers of people who are registering or identify mm-hmm. with no political party are just hugely, hugely increasing.
And so what does that mean when you register? What box do you choose?
Here in California, you choose – every state's different, of course, just to add to the confusion. So here in California, we used to be called decline to state. There's a little box on the registration card that said political party preference.
Right.
There's another box that says American Independent. And a lot of folks, including the former, the wife of the former mayor of San Francisco, Gavin Newsom, who's now lieutenant governor, made the same mistake. They meant to go independent. They meant to check no party preference. That's what it's called now, or decline to state. That's what it was previously called. And they checked American Independent, and it just happens they're the largest third party for pretty much that reason. But that's the box you check. You check no party preference here in California. In other states, it's blank. In other states, there's actually not registration by party. So,
and Omar, quick response to William before we go to break.
Right. No, just what Jason is saying. It's different in North Carolina, for instance. It's unaffiliated is what the box you check off. So election laws are done state by state.
And do you think it sends a message, for example, if your values align with the Green Party, that you should register with the Greens instead of the Independents?
Well, again, state by state, it's different. I think it's really tactical. So if, you know, William feels that that's the way he's going to exert his independence, that's fine. What I would do is urge him to also connect with people who are not just simply Green Party independents, but all kinds of independents, because we are concerned about the political process.
All right. Well, thank you for calling, William. And we'd love to hear from you on this. According to a Gallup poll, 40% of all registered voters are now independents, more than Democrats at 31% and Republicans at 27%. So what are your thoughts on this? If you're an independent, what are your value or what issues do you care about? And what are your thoughts on independents being mostly ignored? 866-798-8255. We'll be back after this.
Your call on Local Public Radio, KALW, San Francisco. If you have a perspective that you haven't heard in today's discussion or a question you feel needs to be answered, please get in touch by calling 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-TALK. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org or post a comment or question at yourcallradio.org.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Tomorrow, we were having a conversation about how small businesses will be affected under an Obama administration or a Romney administration. And we'd love to hear from you if you're a small business owner. What do you think of what we're hearing right now from both sides and what policies you favor? That's tomorrow. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today, we are talking about the largest voting bloc in the United States. Most people don't know this. In fact, I just posted on my Facebook page that independents now comprise a larger group of voters than Republicans or Democrats. And a lot of people are saying, seriously, I had no idea. So we're talking independents at 40%. Democrats, 31%, and Republicans, 27%. Yet, in most media, Republicans, for the most part, dominate, and both parties are ignoring independents. If you're an independent, we'd love to hear from you. If you have any questions about independents, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255. What do you think explains the rise in the number of registered independents? You can also leave a comment at yourcallradio.org. or email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today we're joined by Omar Ali, Associate Professor of African American History at the University of North Carolina, an independent political analyst on CNN and editor of the Neo Independent Online. Jason Olson is Director of IndependentVoice.org, a political nonprofit that serves as the California branch of the independent movement. And we've got full lines, so let's hear from Donald in San Francisco. Hi, welcome to the show. Hello?
The number one thing, I think, causing independents not to be voted for here is a very practical one, and that's the basic system needs to be changed in order that you don't throw your vote away if you vote for an independent versus one of the major parties. I mean, Ralph Nader, you know, he had his great ideas, but the bottom line was he took away votes from the Democrat, and I guess the Tea Party these days is pretty right-wing, and they'll be taking votes away from the Republicans. And this is the essential thing about independence because of the electoral system. And the cool thing about it, though, is there's a very easy way to change it, and it has been changed in the San Francisco elections and in Oakland, and that's simply by instituting instant runoff elections. And that simply means that when you vote for an independent, you put, instead of having voting for your candidate, you rank them. So you vote number one for your independent candidate, then number two for your primary party of choice. And if your independent doesn't get in or doesn't get enough votes, your secondary vote counts as a primary vote. So in other words, you know, you don't throw away your votes by voting for an independent. And until that thing is changed, independents will have no chance in this country. Let me point out, a lot of electoral systems in the world now use this system. It was actually invented in Australia, but these days most countries use that system now. It's only America that is kind of behind.
Well, and they have mandatory voting in Australia. Well, thank you, Donald. I'm sure we've got a lot of callers who disagree with your assessment about Ralph Nader, because it could be argued that a lot of people voted for Ralph Nader who wouldn't have voted at all. But that's for another conversation. But I just wanted to acknowledge that because I know we'll get a lot of calls on that. What are your thoughts, Omar, about IRV?
Well, IRV, like other reforms, have been pressed and successfully enacted as a result of movements that made those things happen. It's not as if, you know, politics is logical that you know, politicians go, okay, well, this is best, you know, for the American people, therefore I'm going to enact this structural reform. These things have been pressed for by the outsiders. I mean, a basic thing that I try to convey about history is that it's always been the outsiders, or the independents, if you will, who have been the engines of change in America, from the abolishment of slavery to, you know, labor rights, women's right to vote, civil rights. All of these movements for change have been led by the outsiders, and at a certain point, politicians will then adopt them. So to go back to, you know, in some ways, what it is that Jason's doing in California, I think it's very important that we have vehicles like independentvoice.org and others that will bring together independents to assert themselves. So one of the sort of activities going on right now is that independents are trying to call on Congress to hold hearings on the second-class status of independents. And that's an important sort of effort among a number of efforts going on locally. But I think Jason can speak to this issue of, you know, IRV and structural reforms in California, because he's basically one of the experts on this.
Thanks, Omar. I mean, in terms of IRV, I think there's I don't want to get too much into the details, into the swamp of details of various election systems, et cetera, et cetera. There's really two critical parts of an election process, right, in my eyes. Number one, is it partisan or is it nonpartisan? That is a fundamentally important question. And then IRV kind of really gets at how are the votes counted. Are they counted all at once, or do you have a second round, essentially? I'm less interested, I'm not negative on IRV, but I'm much less interested in how we count the votes, in what order we count them, than whether or not the system is fundamentally controlled by the political parties. So, for instance, local government here in California has been, for the past, 100 years, nonpartisan. That means if you want to run for mayor, you just put your name on the ballot, you get enough signatures to get yourself on the ballot, and everybody goes and gets the same ballot, and all the voters get treated equally, all the candidates get treated equally. You just vote for the best person, and that best person should win. Unfortunately, we have in this country a partisan system that govern most of our state and federal elections, under which you have to vote in a party. A party nominates a candidate, and at the end of the day, you're only left with those choices. That's why when we passed the open primary, Prop 14 here, which is known as the top two open primary, it's been a fundamental change. And you can just look at how the elections have played out this year here in California as opposed to how they're playing out in other parts of the country.
Yeah, I just heard that in Marin for, I don't remember the race exactly, but because of that law, we've got two Republicans running, no Democrats.
Yeah, there's actually about two dozen races now where you have both the congressional assembly and state senate, where you have races in the second round that are between members of the same party. And at first glance, people say, well, wait a second, that's not real choice. A real choice would be a Republican versus a Democrat, right? Unfortunately, because of the way the districts break down, a lot of these districts are essentially districts that only one party can win. So let's take a district in Orange County where you've got two Republicans running. This is a district where in the past you'd have a Republican who could be Attila the Hun versus a Democrat who could be the second coming of, of Jesus. And the Republican would win that every single time because of the way the district is drawn. Mm-hmm. So essentially you would be disenfranchising all those voters in there except for a very narrow sliver of the base of the Republican Party. Well, now under a nonpartisan system where all voters can participate equally in the first round and all the candidates have to run against each other instead of being sheltered and protected, now you have two Republicans running, and now those Republicans can't just turn out the Republican base and expect to win because the other Republicans are going to be doing the same thing. They actually now have to go talk to independents and Democrats, and they actually have to get away from the control of the political party, and they have to represent the people of their district. That's a fundamental difference you can have when you have open primaries that empower independents to play a leading role in our political process as opposed to a partisan system where you stick us on the back of the bus.
Mm-hmm.
That is Jason Olson, director of independentvoice.org. We're also joined by Omar Ali, editor of the Neo Independent Online and author of the book Independent Black Politics. And we'll speak with Omar after we take a few calls about the history of independence. We've got full lines. Let's hear from Yair in Santa Cruz. Hi, Yair. Welcome to the show.
Hello?
Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, good morning. I just have a very basic question. I just don't understand what registering for a party actually does, either for the individual or for the political system. And I'm just curious to know about that. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Jason.
I mean, well, currently, let's talk about California. With the new change, with open primaries and redistricting reform, it actually, the only time it matters when you register for a political party is going to be the presidential election. If the parties don't allow independents to participate in their presidential primary, which the Republicans did not this year. The Democrats did, of course. Guess who was running? The only person running was Barack Obama. So, but for every other state race now in California, it doesn't matter what party you're registered anymore. You could register no party. You could be like William and register in the Green Party. It doesn't matter for your participation any longer. And that's a really, really great day in California. Unfortunately, the rest of the country does not look like that. The rest of the country, it does matter. And so if you register as an independent, in many states, you're literally closing yourself out of the political process of selecting a candidate because you're probably going to be in a district that's gerrymandered for one political party only. And if you can't participate in that party's primary, then you're fundamentally not going to be in the process of selecting your representative.
All right. Well, thank you for the call. And if you want to know more about gerrymandering, there's a great documentary that explains this. And according to this documentary, Barack Obama would not be president today if it weren't for gerrymandering, which he took part in Chicago and Illinois. Really good documentary. So thank you for the call, Yair. And let's hear from our next caller, Catherine in Santa Cruz. Hi, Catherine.
Hi. Thank you for the program. I've been a longtime alternative, Peace and Freedom, and then Green Party. Always vote for my true beliefs and not just what, you know, they'd like us to think, and the pitiful choices that are left. And I went to a conference all day the other day that I want everybody to know about. It was amazing. It with Marco Vangelisti of Slow Money. And if you get on the Slow Money website, he has so many charts and amazing things that show how the 1% got what they have today and what we need to do. You know, it just becomes obvious. And I just wanted to put that out there, and because it all made so much sense. It was something I thought I should have gotten this in college or something, but it was just wonderful. And I have spoken to you about instant runoff voting before. I know they've been talking about it a little bit. I haven't heard everything they've said today on it. But I just feel like that would help us so much to get out of this Democrat versus Republican rut. And thank you so much for your show.
All right. Well, thank you, Catherine. And if you'd like, you can email us a link and we can put it on our website. Thanks for calling. Let's hear next from Nancy in Berkeley. Hi, Nancy.
Hi. I just wanted to say that I'm a very, very old lady, and for the first time in my life, I did not vote. In the last election, I was so disgusted. So in November, I am going to, quote, hold my nose and vote, because Romney and Ryan are such a horrible combination for our country. So I'm going for Obama. So I just wanted you to know that.
Well, Nancy, can I ask you how old you are?
Yes, you may. I'm going to be 89 in December. So I haven't voted since I was 20. I mean, I have voted since I was 21 when it became legal.
I mean, you must remember that, because Women's Equality Day was yesterday.
Oh, yes. Well, I keep wanting to phone, but my voice is getting so peculiar. So anyway, I just wouldn't miss your call for any reason.
Well, you just made my month. Thank you for calling in, Nancy.
Oh, well.
That was Nancy calling in. Jason, so interesting. She didn't vote last time because she was disgusted, but she's so disgusted by Romney and Ryan that this time she's going to hold her nose and vote for Obama.
Yeah, well, happy early birthday, Nancy. I think Nancy actually expresses a disgust a lot of independents and a lot of Americans feel about the political process. I mean, honestly, I think that she didn't vote. I get that. I understand that. I would obviously urge people to vote. At the same time, I don't think voting is enough right now. I think the country is in enough of a partisan mess where we literally can't do anything right for the country without it being mediated by the political parties and the power brokers, that folks we got to do more. This is my little spiel, and maybe Nancy's kind of come to this. She realizes she's got to do more, so she's coming back around and voting. I would actually ask her, hey, come on out. I mean, come check out independentvoice.org. Check out our national organization, independentvoting.org. You know, get involved in changing the political process. We did it here in California. Now we're going around and we're educating the candidates about the issues of independent voters. We're actually screening them. We're leveraging the independent vote, if you will, with the candidates. And we're having some really, really interesting reactions from the political process and the political players. A lot of them don't know what to make of us. They've never had to do this before.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you see this in Arizona with a fight we've got going on. There's going to be a question on the ballot in Arizona to put open primaries there. Certainly we need to spread this across the country, but I agree with Nancy. It's time to come back to do something new. So she had given up. She's coming back. I urge everybody out there, it's not enough just to vote anymore. We've got to get out. We've got to do more. We've got to build this movement of independent voters to change the entire political process, because certainly our elected officials are not going to do it because the system works for them.
And I would bet that she hasn't given up. She's probably just so disgusted by what's going on that she's making a statement by not voting.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you again for calling in, Nancy. And let's hear next from Bruce in Berkeley. Hi, Bruce. Welcome to the show.
Hello. Isn't Nancy an inspiration?
Oh, yeah.
I'm about 20 years behind her. I have an idea for a voting reform along different lines. I would like to get rid of the Electoral College, but it would take a constitutional amendment, and you know, the small states would never go for it. My idea is, say, for instance, California passes a law that California's electoral votes all go to whoever wins the national popular vote, but this law does not go into effect until enough other states pass a similar law that they constitute a majority of the Electoral College. And when that happens, they all have a conference, agree to a date, and all make their laws effective on the same day. I'm sick of my vote not mattering in the presidential election. You know, California's a solid blue state, and there's a bunch of solid red states, too. You know, those people basically don't get to vote for president one way or the other because it's known ahead of time which way they're going to go. I have not been able to get an answer from a constitutional law scholar if there is any constitutional problem with this. I don't see any, but I don't know. Anyway, that's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
All right. Well, thank you for calling in, Bruce. Let's take a few more calls, and then we'll get comments. Let's hear from Brad in San Francisco. Hi, Brad.
Good morning. The top two voting is a real disaster because most people turn out in the November general election. And so when you're really limited with just the two establishment, top two, the ones that money have bought, it's a real problem. Thank goodness for the Peace and Freedom Party that's forced through the courts to be on the ballot in November to give us a choice. You know, it started with a phony reform back in 100 years ago of the phony nonpartisan local election, just to get the socialists, you know, the movement that was growing at the time out from Berkeley and Oakland when they elected socialist mayors. And now we have phony, they call it open primary, which sounds really nice, but it's basically, it reduces your choices when most people turn out to vote in November, and it's a real problem. We already know how most people don't vote in these other elections, so you can get things like Prop 8, you know, even in the June primary.
Yeah. No, it's a great point. I mean, we're talking, what, 20 to 30% turnout in June? And he brings up a good point about money. This election, shockingly, is expected to cost between $7 and $9 billion. These candidates are raising money on a regular basis, and the Koch brothers are expected to spend something like $400 million to try to get Romney elected. So, Omar, what are your thoughts about just the billions of dollars that it takes to actually take part in these races?
Well, you know, the convention is to talk about sort of the special interests and, you know, the need for campaign finance reform and all that. I understand the spirit of that, but one of the things that I think people don't understand is the sort of the degree to which the major parties control the process.
Right.
And that, in some ways, the largest special interests are the Democratic and Republican parties. Let's remember that corporations go to elected officials not the other way around. So Pfizer might give 50% to the Democratic Party candidate, 50% of, you know, their money to the Republican candidate, just to make sure that whoever wins, you know, they're sort of, you know, they're taken care of. So in some ways, that if we're going to deal with this issue of the money, we need to go after the source, which is actually the parties. So it's a different way of looking at things, and it's something that the Democratic and Republican parties do not want us to focus on, because at the end of the day, they lock arms to keep everybody out of the game. So unless you're a billionaire like Ross Perot or a major celebrity figure like, you know, like Ralph Nader, you know, you just don't get heard. I mean, who knows how many people in this country know that the first woman and actually the first African-American on the ballot in all 50 states was Dr. Lenora Fulani in 1988, 20 years before Barack Obama becomes the first, you know, black president. Here's this woman who does this. And her whole campaign was about challenging the power that the parties have over the political process.
I've never heard of her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. She's from Chester, Pennsylvania, originally. She's a developmental psychologist doing fantastic work with youth programs called the All-Stars. And she's, yeah, she's just a real pioneer. She's actually going to be giving the keynote address at my university in North Carolina in October. But just in a sort of a pioneer of independent black politics, or just independent politics.
Well,
and there's a history of that.
Yeah, talk a little bit about this, because in your book you write that historically most black voters in the U.S. have aligned themselves with the Republicans and the Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
But you also say that blacks have long been part of an independent political movement and have used third parties to advance things like the abolition of slavery, the extension mm-hmm. of voting rights, the enforcement of civil rights.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, the gentleman was asking about, you know, the Constitutional Convention and changing the Electoral College and all that. I mean, in our Constitution, you know, there's no mention of political parties. And yet these two entities, which are private organizations, act as if they are public institutions, and they have basically taken over government. So even, you know, one of the founders of this nation, George Washington, warned against the spirit, as he said, of the parties, that parties are looking after their own interests, and that that is going to be corrosive for the Republic, a very prescient comment. Mm. He actually made another comment in his farewell address, which was that that not to get overly entangled in foreign affairs, which in some ways are the two critical issues going on in the world right now in terms of America, the partisan control of the process and the issue of the wars overseas that we're involved in, overextending ourselves. So there's this long history of Americans challenging the major parties at the time. So the Democratic and Republican parties really emerge in the middle of the 19th century as institutions. The Democratic Party goes back to the 1820s, which was a party which was formed basically to give poor white men the right to vote. But over time, African Americans and women and, you know, who are African-Americans, of course, you know, have asserted some of these basic principles that we cherish as Americans, that all people are created equal, and that, you know, there should be democracy in America. And so there's been sort of a taking of this language to assert their voice, and they've done that through independent movement building. So when we talk about, you know, election reforms, whether it's instant runoff voting or, you know, the need for redistricting that's nonpartisan, these kinds of things will come about if movements continue to grow, if the independents continue to grow as a force.
And I'm so glad you're bringing this up, and I'm sorry to cut you off, but we're almost out of time. What has this done to the health of movements and a strong dialogue among the populace? Because I have to say, I've been kind of shocked looking at what under the Bush administration, you know, the people that went after him for the wars, military spending, drones, civil liberties, deporting immigrants, you name it, are giving Obama a pass for the very same issues.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I think that, again, it's sort of Obama instilled a sense of hope for the future. He was elected, not just simply, I mean, as you was talking about the documentary in terms of gerrymandering, but really it was the margin of victory of independence together with African Americans that brought him to the White House. In fact, New York Magazine described him as America's first black and America's first independent president, which was very true for about 4 nanoseconds. Once he got into the presidency, he basically gave over his independence, that nonpartisan spirit that elected him to office, to the Democratic Party, which was absolutely deathly, to, in some ways, to the efforts to try to reform the political culture in this country.
And we have just a couple of minutes left here. Where is this going from here? Because you're talking 40% independents, 31 Democrats, 27 Republicans. It seems like this voting bloc is just growing.
Absolutely. And what independents can do now is really put pressure on Obama and also Romney to reconnect and speak up for them. Both candidates would do well, and I think third party candidates should be running and all that and all that, but they would do well, the major party candidates, and specifically I'm speaking about Obama because he won through independent voters, to reconnect by speaking up for the political reforms that independent leaders have been calling for, people like Jacqueline Saylor, whose book I mentioned, Independence Rising, or Jason Olson there in California, which are what are those things? Reforming the open primaries, calling for that this is an important democracy effort, putting an independent on the Federal Election Commission, which is basically made up of 3 Democrats and 3 Republicans, redistricting that's, again, nonpartisan. These are structural reforms that a lot of people just kind of roll their eyes and they go, what does this have to do with the real issues? Well, they have everything to do with the real issues, because unless you have a more open process, you can't have policy that's innovative, that's in some ways that is responsive to the American people, not the party's interests.
Right, and we didn't get to mention this, but it is important news that California might become the largest state in the country to offer same-day registration.
Mm-hmm.
So,
exactly.
Yes. Right. Omar Ali, Associate Professor of African-American History at the University of North Carolina, and Jason Olson, Director of IndependentVoice.org. Thank you both for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you, and thanks for your phone calls and emails. Thanks for listening. I'm Rose Aguilar. Here's what's coming up tomorrow. What does this election mean for small businesses? On the next Your Call, we'll have a conversation about the future of the small business sector. According to the Small Business Association, firms with fewer than 500 employees provide jobs for over half of the nation's workforce. How do the close ties of both parties to big business shape their approach to small business? If you're a small business owner, what policies do you support? It's Your Call with me, Rose Aguilar, and you. Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To listen to past shows or to sign up for our podcast or newsletter, visit yourcallradio.org. Malihe Razazan and Ali Budner produce the show. Matt Martin is the executive producer. Pete Misick is our web editor. And Becca Hoekstra is our intern. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer. And Joe Burke is the studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and produced by Live Human. Your Call is produced by KALW in San Francisco. Special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org. Hi, this is Lauren Meltzer of City Visions. Tonight on our program, we will look at Title IX, the law that guarantees equal treatment for women in federally financed education programs. In the 40 years since this law was passed, what progress has been made for women and girls? What are the misperceptions about Title IX, and how can we ensure equity in athletics and beyond? Join us with your questions and comments tonight at 7 p.m. on City Visions, here on Public Radio KALW.
Local Public Radio KALW San Francisco. Stay tuned for the BBC's World Have Your Say. It's 11 o'clock.
Hello, this is the BBC. I'm Ben James. You're with World Have Your Say, the international conversation where we follow your agenda.
These incidents will not affect our operations. The campaign is on track. We effectively fight the insurgency.
It's one of the most read stories on sites around the world today. The death of 17 civilians, apparently at the hands of Taliban fighters in Afghanistan's Helmand province. You're also talking about 10 Afghan soldiers killed in a Taliban attack there. How do you cope in a place like Helmand? How does it compare to the rest of Afghanistan? Post on facebook.com/worldhaveyoursay with questions for our guests who are there. Also, some women in Togo are calling for political change by holding a week-long sex strike. Do you think it's an effective way to protest?